Alcoholics Anonymous and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Again, good evening. My name is Jason, an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. The first 10-minute speaker is Mitch R.
Mitch Rodell, alcoholic. Thank you, Mary, for asking me to do this. If you're new, welcome. My first memories that I think I remember, I'm still crazy. I barely remember what I did at work today. I hope my boss doesn't ask me. But as far as I can tell what happened, I'll tell you what happened. But my first memories are just like overcome with crippling anxiety, and I didn't know I was anxious because I'd never been not anxious. Everything hurt. I was sweating constantly. That messed with my stomach, so I was crapping myself constantly. They took me to a bunch of doctors to try to figure it out. Nobody knew. Everybody thought that I was really nice. I was like the nice little boy, and all the moms loved me. And it was really just because I was flirting with the moms and hoping that they would do something. The teachers, the babysitters, all of them, like 5, 6 years old, that's what I was thinking about. Plus, while I'm trying to fall asleep at night, I think the universe is exploding and it's my fault. So 5, 6, 7, I've got delusions of grandeur. I'm like weird and horny, and I just don't know what's going on. And I don't know that this isn't how everybody else is. I just think there's certain things you talk about and certain things you don't, because the kids definitely aren't talking about the universe exploding or the babysitter in the playground. But I just did my best and sweated through it all. And then about 12, my parents got divorced. Dad started going crazy. And now I'm starting to like question these voices and feelings even more because now I'm that divorced kid. And then Dad runs off and goes crazy, and now we're like the poor white trash family. And then we move in the middle of the night because my mom wants to get away from my dad and doesn't want him to follow us. And now we're in a nicer town with nicer schools, and I'm feeling weirder and different. And now I'm ready for a drink. Like, I'm really ready for a drink. And then luckily, the kids in my English class wanted to hang out with me for some reason. And that just happened to be when they started drinking and using. And it was magic. It took me a while. I got a big head, and like it took a while for the pot and the drugs to get all the way in there and work. But booze worked every time when I could get it down. But I had trouble getting it down because of my stomach issues. But I kept working at it because booze worked every time. It always calmed me down, and it made me funny. At least I thought I was funny. And the drugs, though, I never knew it was going to happen. Sometimes paranoid, sometimes awesome. Every now and then, though, the combination of booze and drugs was just perfect. So that was about freshman year English class. By senior year, I finally felt cool. Everybody wanted to hang out with us because we knew how to get loaded better than everybody else. My mom worked late to support me and my two little brothers. So every day after school, we go to my house. We had this fort in the backyard that became the reefer shed. And the reefer shed was the place to be. It was great. So senior year, things are going well. I attempted to have a girlfriend a couple of times. That went pretty well, sort of. I have friends. Things are cool, but then it's like, oh, we're graduating, and now I have to be a grown-up and do those grown-up things. I can't go to college because I don't want to do anything, but I don't want to be a grown-up either. So I did a few things to screw that up. I ran naked at my graduation. I got caught playing mailbox baseball. And then I stole from the police station, which the cops don't like that. So I ended up doing 28 days. And I know for the guys in here, they're like, pfft. But I did 28 days. My nickname in there was Doogie Howser, which is not the nickname you want when you're locked up. I was not cool or tough in there. I started a semi-riot over a soup. because he punked me for a soup. Some of you guys know what that's like. And they opened the door and I left and I was ready to go, but I get why people go back. Because in there, I woke up every morning, I knew when my food was going to arrive or when I was going to arrive at my food. There was TV to watch, I even took a class and learned about things. And I had friends, we played games, but out here, there's decisions to make. And I don't like making decisions because I'm going to make the wrong decision. I'm going to waste some time or lose some money or piss you off and have to make it up. And it's all scary and complicated and no thank you. But I also didn't want to go back there. So I just like slowly for the next 10 years made my life simpler and smaller. But at times really fun. And by the end of it, I had moved out here to California because I thought that was going to fix it. I was living in Venice Beach. And I had worked my way up to the worst bartender in LA. I couldn't remember the drinks. I couldn't stay behind the bar. I couldn't keep track of the money, which is really all a bartender has to do. I wasn't the cool bartender that was getting laid or making money. I was on the day shift, sometimes worked weddings. The weddings are fun because, like, you don't have to remember the drinks. There's no money. They just give you a ticket, pour the wine. So 12 Mother's Days ago, I'd gone through a manic episode, depressive episode. I'm drinking every single day. A good day was when I woke up, walked to the liquor store at the corner of Venice and Ocean, get a little nip of Jack, and get a three-pointer in the dumpster on the way home in the alley. I knew the day was going to be good if I could start it like that. And 13 Mother's Days ago now, my friend asked me to do AA just for 30 days to see what it was like. And as soon as I said yes, these weird coincidences started happening. And my dad had committed suicide after getting religious. My mom's Irish Catholicism didn't seem to help her or family at all. I wanted nothing to do with it, but coincidence after coincidence after coincidence. So I say, okay, I go to my first meeting, more coincidences. I cry and snot when I say my name is Mitch, I'm an alcoholic, and they give me the welcome chip. And I sit down, I go to some meetings. I kind of get a sponsor. She had Chuck Taylors and tattoos, and I fell in love. She had 6 years, I had 6 weeks. That was enough time for both of us. So I moved in with her, even though my sponsor and everybody said it was a bad idea. But we were in love. They didn't understand. I got commitments like walking her dog and doing the dishes. She got commitments like paying off my credit cards and getting me to quit. My nighttime job was interfering with our relationship, so it had to go. And I got a job working days as a waiter at this great breakfast place in Venice. And I thought I had everything figured out, but then I realized I didn't love her. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. So I snuck out of her place, moved into my friend's couch, tried a beer on the boardwalk, and when I drank the beer, nothing bad happened. I'd been going crazy. Like, I thought the radio was talking to me. I thought I had this direct connection with God, and you guys were all suckers, and I'd figured it out. So I figured if I can drink and God doesn't do anything bad to me right away, then it's fine. He didn't, but within 2 weeks, I did. And I just treated my friends like crap, screwed up those credit cards, and one night in a blackout pulled my best friend's girlfriend into the bathroom. And when I woke up in the morning from a blackout and he told me that was the worst I've ever felt, I don't ever want to feel that way again. I did my 28 days, fill out of cars, did terrible stuff to myself, but to realize that I could do that to her or any other woman, I was it. So I had a card in my pocket, another weird coincidence. This guy had seen me doing AA my way, and gave me the card thinking it wasn't going to work for me. But he said, when you're ready to try it another way, just give me a call. So that card was still in my pocket after 6 months of crazy AA, my AA, 2 weeks of gnarly relapse. And I called it, happened to be a Wednesday. He brought me to this meeting an hour later, told me, shake that hand, get that guy's number, and ask that guy to be your sponsor. Shook that hand, shook that hand, shook that hand. Asked that guy to be my sponsor. He said, get a commitment and call me tomorrow. The next day I went to Key Group and asked Jack for a ride home. Jack looked like he was in this burnt trench coat. He was dried up. It was scary. I don't know why I asked him for a ride home. Another coincidence, he lived four blocks from the couch I was staying on at the time. So I started going to meetings every night with Jack. Another coincidence, a few weeks later, his roommate bounces on him in the middle of the month and stiffs him on the rent. I have just enough money to move in with him, but I'm good. I got a couch. I'm a good couch monkey. Things are fine. Coincidence, my couch master bounces to Florida, so I got to move in with Jack. I spent that first year going to meetings all over town with Jack, watching him have a spiritual experience while I had a spiritual experience, so I finally believed it, because it wasn't all just in my crazy head. If you're new, in our format at the end of the night, they're going to tell us that we can go to as many meetings as we can. Just go. Try all the AAs. Try the whole buffet. I like this one the most. This one has helped fix my life. But try them all. And now we have Zoom. I can't tell you what just learning to be of service has done for my life. It's made it incredible. If you're new, you can be of service right away. You don't have to wait till you figure anything out. We will show you how to be of service right away. And I promise if you do that, your life will get better. For me, it has. And now, I used to be scared of everything. I used to think everything was going to run out. There is an unlimited amount of help here for you. And wherever you go in the world, now you can tune in and get it. So please stick around and check it out. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Amy M.
Hi, I'm Amy McKinnon. I'm an alcoholic. It is so great to be here, and don't touch the microphone. And so lovely to see all of my friends. My heart feels like it grew 5 times today. And thank you, Mary, my friend, for asking me to share tonight. On the plane here today, I live in Texas. On the plane here, I didn't really plan my plane flight because I'm not into the, I used to be coming every month here, but now I'm kind of out of it. So I didn't plan my day right. So I didn't have anything to do. So I looked at my Big Book app. I read my Big Book. And it said on my sobriety countdown that I'm 32.93 years sober. For that, I am so grateful. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a little bit before my 18th birthday. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. My name was, thank you, Motor City. My last name was Brewer before it was McKinnon, and I come from a long line of brewers who, to my knowledge, never blessed the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but had a lot of damage out there in the world, and I did the same. I learned how to make myself hot toddies when I was 7 years old. It's my favorite drink. My mom taught me how to make them in the microwave because she wasn't interested in helping me do much. And I don't know if this makes me alcoholic or not. I don't think it does, but I did grow up with a lot of drinking, and that just meant it was very accessible to me, which I enjoyed very much. we used to chop down cherry trees in our backyard and get all the cherries and make cherry vodka, which is not complicated at all. You just wash the cherries and put them in the bell jar, dump generic vodka on top, seal it up, and then wait. And I always would take a few to my room for myself. Alcohol produces in me a great sense of spiritual well-being until it doesn't anymore. By the time I was 12, I had a significant event happen to me when I was 12 and drinking. And that was the first time that I'd ever been out all night where my parents were looking for me and calling the police, wondering where I was. And it talks about this in the book, but this is what happened to me. There was a switch because something really bad happened to me and I couldn't talk to anybody about it because I knew I'd get in trouble. And after then, I had to drink because that happened, and then the cycle started because the more I drank, the more bad things kept happening, and then I had to drink because of those things too. And I was growing up in the 80s. I had so many things wrong with me. There was the era of the ABC after school special, and I like to say that I had every single topic wrong with me that was on the ABC after school specials, except for scoliosis. but I am an athlete, and I've been in PT for the last couple of years, and my PT told me the first appointment that I had a sway back, and I was like, see, I do have all of the problems, but I did have all of the problems. I had alcoholism was my primary disease, but I had so many other things going on, anorexia, bulimia, OCD, lots of impulse control, anxiety, depression, all of it. I treated 100% of that with talk therapy, nutrition therapy, art therapy. That really didn't work. I still can't draw a sun. And in fact, I always say I was not a spoiled only child. The reason I got a car when I was 16 years old was so I could drive myself to therapy because nobody wanted to drive me anymore. And what I have to say about that is I have sought outside help throughout the course of my sobriety for things that I need help for other than alcoholism. But for my alcoholism, I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I have a spiritual disease and a physical craving that can only be addressed here in the rooms of AA. And like Mitch said, thank you for your awesome talk, Mitch. I would like a reefer shed, but turns out now I'm old and been in AA too long. But like Mitch said, the service really does solve half of my problems. But a therapist of mine, what's happening? The lights went out. Well, somebody should tell me if I'm done. But I ended up finding Alcoholics Anonymous because somebody recommended that I go to the program of Al-Anon in Detroit. And I went to a meeting at Christ Church Cranbrook in Birmingham, Michigan on a Wednesday night, and I walked in and I went to the wrong 12-step program. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and people from that group knew who I was because I drank and partied with them, and they thought I was there for AA. And I did not get sober right away. It took a few months. It talks about it in the book also. When I had a mind full of Alcoholics Anonymous and a body full of alcohol, it just really, I couldn't get to where I needed to go anymore. And so I joined you guys in January of 1989. I did not get a big book. I did not get a sponsor, and I did not work the steps. I was, like I said, preparing for my prom. And I just did not see how most of this stuff applied to me, you guys, and I didn't do it. And at 9 months, 10 months of sobriety, I found myself at the University of Michigan Psychiatric Hospital for a few months. And it was real. They took away my glass objects and gave me some shrinky dinks in art class and all that stuff. And there were residents my age who were seeing me and told me that I would not live a life without medication, and that's absolutely not been the case. And it turns out I'm not crazy either. I need to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got out, I got my first sponsor, and I started working the steps. My sponsor told me that I had been living a life of self-obsession, and I needed to get into service, and I needed to pray and find a God of my understanding. And I started to do those things because I was completely out of answers. When I was around 5 years sober, a little bit, 5 years sober, I came to the Pacific Group, and I just cannot believe how much my life changed when I found Pacific Group. It was a complete transformation. One of my favorite things about Saturdays was that I would go to the yard, and then my commitment was to cut vegetables at the Saturday night meeting before it started. And I had to be at the Saturday night meeting at 5:30 to cut the vegetables, but the meeting started at 8. And I remember thinking, like, that doesn't even make sense. But I don't know why we have to be there that early, but I never told anybody that because I was told to do what I was asked in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I showed up and I cut the vegetables. And I always like to say, I work for very high-level people now, and I never ask them why they're telling me to do what I'm doing. And it's because I cut vegetables at 5:30 at the Saturday night meeting and never asked. And what it turned out was I made a lot of friends because I cut vegetables with those people, and then we would have all this time to kill, so we'd go to coffee And then the meeting, of course, and that would be my whole Saturday earlier in my sobriety. And, you know, I met my husband here. I was sponsored at the time by Karen G, and he was sponsored by Frank Jones. And you know, that's a recipe for disaster right there. But we did good. We're still married. We got married in April of 1998, and really started building a life of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsoring and being sponsored and just trying to do what we could here in the program. And we are two crazy kids who don't deserve the life that we have at all. But we'll take it, and we'll do whatever kind of service work and going to meetings and being with you guys that we can in order to keep it. So, like I said, I'm just super happy to be here and see everybody. It's been a long couple of years. I, in particular, have had a long couple of years. I want to thank my sponsor, Kenna, who has been a rock and a support for me. I lost my sponsor, Claire E. She sponsored me more than 20 years, and that's been up and down. But being able to take Kenna's direction and having her loving meanness on the phone sometimes really helps. And I appreciate that so much. And thank you for my life.
Our main speaker for tonight is Danny T.
My name is Danny. I'm an alcoholic. Wow. I love this meeting. I'm glad it's back. It's funny because I've been here with three wives. We used to have AA dances here and NA dances. And when I walked in, I thought, oh my God, ghost of Christmas past. Wow, three wives and two moms of my kids that I wasn't married to. But Alcoholics Anonymous is not a marriage counselor. I don't forget what they call it, man, but I just got some great wives out of here. Great moms for my kids. You know, I love AA. I'm sorry. It's like I was talking to my sponsor Johnny when I got here, and you know, this is the best life I've ever had, man. I've been sober now since 1968, and in 1968, you know, I might have been going to the gas chamber. We were involved in a riot in prison, and it was alleged that I hit Lieutenant Givens in the head with a rock, and Henry Quijada kicked Coach Strawmeyer, and Ray Pacheco socked a free person. Wait a minute, am I snitching? No, they both passed away, and and yeah, let me tell you something, the young lady that talked, said it, the whole thing about slippers, okay? Everyone, oh my God, I slipped, my life went to... No, let me tell you what's bad about slipping. What's bad about slipping is a body full of booze or drugs and a mind full of Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, that's the worst thing in the world because nobody likes you. Do you understand? Another drunk in a bar, damn sure, I don't want to hear about it. I had 30 days, and he doesn't want to see your stinking chips. Yeah. And the connection, damn sure don't like. Get out of here. Just get some stuff and get out of here, man. I don't care about you or your sponsor. Get your dope. So you go from having this unbelievable, beautiful life that you refuse to accept because we're so smart. And you know what the thing that we should do? Newcomers should absolutely not be able to use the word, I know. How's that? I know. I know. No, you don't. You know what I'm saying? If you know, you wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? You just shut up. I met my sponsor in 1963. You know, I was already in jail. I was in a youth authority. And Johnny was the outside speaker. And I remember, hey, what are you going to teach me? You know what I mean? Because I was, you don't know, but in 1963, the kid was cool. All right, God, I had everything in that institution. In fact, Frank Russo. And I say that because he told me never to mention his name. But, and he just passed away, Johnny. He passed away last week. And they called me and told me, you know, but this is the guy. I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? 1959, me and about 20 other guys, a whole carload, bouncing down the street, Van Nuys Boulevard, and we passed a big house right on Lev Street and Van Nuys Boulevard, one of them big craftsmen. They've since knocked it down. And there's like 10 cars parked out in front of that house. Now, in that neighborhood, you will probably only find two cars, one that they use, a 53 Chevy that's on blocks in the front yards there. They work on it. And there was something going on, so we naturally stopped the car to go see what was going on. It was some type of party. We went to the trunk of the car to get the tools necessary to be invited, and bumper jacks, tire irons, piece of pipe. I had a case of beer, 3 bottles of wine, half pint of whiskey. I was already loaded on Red Devils and a .38 snub nose, and I wasn't the only one with a pistol. And we just kind of went up, kicked in the, you have to kick in the front door, because if you knock, they just lock it and call the police, and then the papers say undesirables were arrested. So just kicked in the front door, and the first thing we saw was a sign that said, "We care." We had just crashed the Friday night speakers meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the We Care group. Now, when you crash an event, there's only two greetings you can get. Either everybody rushes to the opposite side of the room, that means, oh boy, they're willing to throw this event in our honor, or you get one of them athlete parties and they're rushed to your side. And that's what all them jump bumper jacks and piece of pipe are for. And a 38 snub nose will stop anybody. And says, you don't have to use it, just put it on. And we got the stupidest greeting in the world. We had all these people going, "Hi, I'm Bob," and shaking hands. And at that time, they used to have cups that were an inch thick, brown, with a number on them. And it was a date. But if somebody hits you with that cup, you got a skull fracture. So everybody's saying, "Hello, how are you?" And get out of here. And I've always taught my crew, stay in a group. They can't touch us. But you did that divide and conquer. Because when I turned around, "Let's get out of here," everybody was in little groups of four and talking about being sober, you know. And this guy comes up to me and starts talking about, "Hey, Danny, why don't you put that stuff outside and join us, you know?" And "Shut up, old man. I got penitentiaries to go to, you know." I did, too. You know? And he whispered, "The curse of Alcoholics Anonymous. Same curse works in NA." He said, "It works in CA, too." And he said, "Danny, if you leave this program, you will die, go insane, or go to jail." Notice how quiet the room got. You're all screwed. you know, go out, see what happens. Because even the lights on the police car, when they go on behind you, watch them. Die, go insane, go to jail. Die, go insane, go to jail. It's like, you'll be hearing that from now on. If you go out, die, go insane, go to jail. And I've had people come up to me and say, Dan, in detox, and they'll say, Dan, me and my wife were watching television, all of a sudden you came on, and you said, die, go insane, go to jail. And it was hallucination. I never said that on TV. Oh, you guys were hallucinating. No, we saw you. Well, I'm glad you're here. And that's it. You will be hearing that. I heard that in every penitentiary in the state of California. The worst feeling in the world. Body full of drugs and alcohol. Mind full of Alcoholics Anonymous. San Quentin. The Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is now meeting in the Protestant chapel. All inmates wishing to attend. And what do you hear? Die, go insane, go to jail. That's it. You're done. Do you understand? Your drinking career is over. Now, a lot of you are going to say, ah, bullshit. I know, I understand. I did it. In 1963, after I'd been in AA, I've been back to the joint twice. I show up in youth authority, and what happens? I run into Johnny Harris, and I'll never forget. What are you going to teach me, old man? And God, he was like 40 then. And, damn. He's nothing. I'm just here to give you previews of coming to track. I'll never forget that. And I had to go to them because I signed up for the meeting. Stupidest thing in the world. Because once you sign up for the meeting, Frank got me to go to that meeting. He was already there because he shot a cop and a kid in front of Sun Valley Receiving Hospital over a resentment. And he was there. So, come on, Danny, let's go to this meeting. Let's go to this meeting. I said, no, man, I'm studying to be a journeyman convict, fool. He says, hey, there's coffee and cake. I'm studying to be a journeyman convict, fool. I got coffee and cake. Got cigarettes. I got cards of cigarettes. And he says, girls are coming up. What time's the meeting? And I made the mistake of signing up. I should have put, because I want to see the girls. But I put, I want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous for my alcohol problem. You have to put that. So I did. Problem with that is that when you have a jacket, paper goes into your jacket, it follows you throughout your prison career. And so every time I'd go to parole board, oh, we see you have an alcoholic, and you got to go back to meetings. So every week I had to go to that meeting, became good friends with Johnny. I'll never forget, I walked in one time, because everybody used to walk in there just with regular clothes, like, you know, unpressed. And I'd walk in there with my clothes starched, pressed, buttoned up. Hey, now. And I was cool, I told you. And I remember Johnny going, damn, Danny. Only thing that's going to beat you to San Quentin are the headlights on the bus. I thought it was a compliment. I did. Yeah, gotcha. Let me show you. When the bus pulled up to San Quentin, it was night, and the headlights, I'm looking at them, and I remember saying, hey, let me out so I can beat the headlights. Johnny must have told that to everybody on that bus, because everybody knew what, they all laughed. Yeah, let's walk in front of the, because the headlights beat us there. And it was like, wow. I remember him telling me about the Garden Beautiful. It's a garden, you walk in there, it looks really beautiful. And it does. When you first, wow, this place is like Disney. That beautiful, beautiful garden. The minute you turn the corner, it's like, oh my God. It's like, whoa. All of a sudden, the buildings are so gray, they glow in the dark. You know, and it's night, cold, and the ghosts of penitentiary's past are all there. You know what I mean? It's like, wow. I mean, it like sucks the life out of you. Right there. You realize, I'm dead. And he's like, whoa, wait a minute, man. This is crazy. I knew all about this. I learned all about this. There's a previews of coming attractions. It was a curse and a blessing. Because I don't know what the blessing was, because the curse, wow, San Quentin. And it was funny, like 28 days. I understand, but it takes 28 days to get processed into San Quentin. You know what I mean? And you're not even in your cell yet. Because if you come from another institution, you got to go to the B section and stay there till they clear you, till they find out nobody wants to kill you. Or they know nobody wants to kill you, or that you haven't told on anybody, or that you're not affiliated with any negative prison society. So then you get to go to your cell. And I was on the fifth tier of the South Block. Now, the South Block is like the ghetto. And you have to be good like 30 days, 60 days, I think, to get out of the South Block. I never got out of the South Block. I couldn't make it. It was just too much stress. And it's funny because when people always say to you, oh my God, I can't go through it. How does it say in the book? It's a, oh my, I can't go through it. I always think of myself in San Quentin going, oh my, I can't go through it. Shut up, man. It's like life has been so beautiful out here. I got out in 1969. And I had made a promise in the hole in Soledad. God, if you let me die with dignity, I will say your name every day, and I will do what I can for my fellow inmate. I said inmate, because I never thought I was going to get out of prison. And when the parole board, Mad Dog Madden, that's his God-given name, I think. He says, Trail, we're going to give you a chance to spread your wings. He said, we're tired of messing with you. You got a rehab, bring us back a life sentence. What a thing to say. Not, hey, get out there. Show them what you got, kid. Get out there, score a touchdown. Bring us back a life sentence. I'll never forget that. And I wanted to say, don't you have no faith? Bring us back a life sentence. We're tired of messing with you. I got out and I was like, done. Yeah, wait a minute, man. I'm 25 years old, going to be 26. I got a parole, and I'm standing out in front of my mom's house, and nobody in this neighborhood likes me because I've broken into every house, robbed every garage. I don't think anybody in my neighborhood had a lawnmower. It's to steal lawnmowers, you know. Steal tools, anything that's valuable. Burglary stone. I remember this one lady, she was pulling out her trash cans. Because in the 60s and 70s, nobody had those big, beautiful green, brown, black trash cans they got now. They just put everything in a tub and drug it out. And I remember her pulling it out. And she said, as I walked up to help her, I'll never forget, she goes, no me robaste! Shut up, vieja! Bitch. And I grabbed her trash can, I pulled it out, and then I went to her backyard to get her other one, and she never took her eyes off me, because she knew I was going to break for that garage and get another lawnmower. And I didn't. I just brought the other one out and walked away. And they told me, you have to do things for other people and not expect any kind of reward. Just do it. As I did. I just take people's trash out, all the old people. The first present I could ever remember getting, because you don't get a lot of presents in prison. You better not. But this old man, he had real bad arthritis, like the crippling, you know, he couldn't use it. He used to kick his trash cans out. And I used to go get his trash can. He gave me a double-breasted, fake suede blazer. It'd be worth a lot of money right now. But it was, and I remember that. Mom, what's that? That old man gave it to you. And I have been receiving gifts. Everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. Everything. Me and a kid named Danny Levitoff, when I got out of the joint, started a gardening business with nothing. One of the wives that I brought here gave me a 59 Impala that she had because her dad had given her another car, and so I had this 59 Impala. The 59 Impala has a huge trunk, so we would pull up to somebody's house. I'd send Danny up, because real good Levitoff, nice white kid. Hi, can I mow your lawn? And they, oh, sure, oh, God. And then I'd come, I'd have a shirt on because of all the tattoos. And Danny would say, do you have a lawnmower? And they go, yeah, okay, can we use it? And then we'd ask them if they had trash bags. And if you have an edger, oh, cool. And then what we do, we get those and go mow a couple other lawns and then come back and do theirs. And so we had a pretty good business going. But there was this one lady, I remember when I left to go to the joint, she had a beautiful yard. She had dichondra. Dichondra is the stupidest grass in the world. You can't walk on it. You got to have like a gardener there 24 hours a day. That's dichondra. It's stupid. And she had a dichondra lawn, you know. And when I came back from the joint, she had a garbage. I mean, it was like a jungle. And I said, Mom, what happened to the lady? She said, Mijor, you know what? One of her sons got killed in Vietnam. Another one got killed in a gang situation. Her husband committed suicide, and she turned into the bruja, the witch lady, and, you know, the one that turns the kids into cats. And now my neighborhood, this is what happened. And she would... So we would just go we'd be there twice a week and just do something on our yard, do something here. We had started looking pretty good. We got a sprinkler system going on. And not dichondra, though. We'd, you know, just marathon or whatever the grass was. And she would always, it's so funny, she'd give us lemonade. And she would have those old people glasses and old people. She put a pitcher out, beautiful crystal pitcher. And it had the gold around the top, you know, old people had the gold, and then two beautiful glasses with ice and with gold on the top. And I had a fantasy in the pen of being in Vegas just with my cool self. Hey, babe, give me a drink. And ordering a drink, and they bring them in crystal glasses. Kaling, kaling, because Chris... Ice sounds different in the crystal glass than in like a tumbler or a tin cup. Clunk, clunk, clunk. I had this crystal, and I'll never forget when I poured the lemonade. I gave it to Danny first. I try that and see what if you turn into a cat. And I hear that clink, clink. And you know, say, it's not exactly what I meant, God. You know what I mean? But we'd have this delicious lemonade. And this guy comes over. Hey, Pablo. Okay, that'll be $10 for whatever you want, sucker Pablo. How much you charging the lady? Nothing, she's crazy. You know, she says, well, bring Pablo and let's go check my yard out. That's another $10. Big old hillbilly. Well, I want you to, he wanted me, he gave us all the stuff. He got up to about $40 a month. A lot of money then. It was 1970 and about $40 a month. See, I pay him that much now for just showing up. And but $40 a month, you're cool. That's cool. And then he goes to his garage and he opens his garage. And this was like they could have this garage in Showtime or something, right? Beautiful garage. And you could tell the hammer was gone because there was a picture of it painted there. I remember, your hammer's gone. And because all the tools, they had painted. And he says, look, I'll give you all this equipment. He had all kinds of gardening equipment. I'll give you all this gardening equipment if you come mow my lawn. I love working on the yard. I'll be right here with you. But I had a heart attack. My wife won't let me work anymore. I said, mister, I'll come wash your back too, homie. So all of a sudden we had this, we had so much equipment. We bought a truck. And we started a real gardening business. When I sold that gardening business, me and Danny made a lot of money. I went to work in drug abuse. Everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. I got into the movies. A kid had me being an extra. And I was working as a drug counselor. I was making, I don't know, a little bit of money a week. But us kids says, come on, Dan, we're going to leave. So I stand in there. Give my $50. Give me $50. Cool. Stood there for 2 hours and got $50. And this one movie I walked on with this kid, I run into a friend of mine, a guy named Eddie Bunker, right? And Eddie knew Johnny. We started talking. Hey, Eddie, I hadn't seen this guy since San Quentin. He was the captain's clerk. That was the most powerful position in the pen. And he says, Danny, are you still boxing? I saw you win the lightweight and the welterweight title. I've been quitting. I go, hell no, Eddie, I'm 40 years old. I can't get in this face no more. He said, we need somebody to train one of the actors how to box. And I said, what's it pay? Because I'm making $50 for acting like a convict. Eddie laughed because we've been doing that for free all our lives. He says, it pays $320 a day. And I says, how bad do you want this guy beat up? He says, you can't hit him because he's the actor. He might sock you. I said, shit, for $320, give him a stick. I've been beat up for free. Are you crazy? I started training an actor named Eric Roberts how to box for a movie called Runaway Train. And they gave me a SAG card. I'll never forget this Russian aristocrat, a guy named Andrei Kajalowski. He says, you be in movie. You fight Eric in movie. And you be my friend. If you get if you got a prison background, get a little worried when people say, you be my friend. And then this big old Russian leans over, kisses me on one cheek, kisses me on the other cheek, and walks away. I told him, hey, I'm going to train the kid for the 320, but if I'm going to be kissing that old man, I want more money. He's European. I didn't know they kissed. But when I found out what that SAG card meant, I said, I'll kiss that old man right in the mouth. Yeah. Everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. And the only reason I'm helping anybody is because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because they taught me being of service. Harris, Johnny taught me that. But I just come up to the joint all the time. And it wasn't no like, and to come up to a bunch of guys that are just going to the meeting to get out of staying in the cell. But it's like, wow, the rewards that I've gotten. I feel guilty if I have a bad day. Do you understand? He's like, wait a minute. You know, I had cancer, and I was doing it. I had a bunch of contracts, so I couldn't tell anybody except for John. Of course, Johnny, and I'm like sick. I'm taking that chemo, and the director would say, cut. I'd go off by myself, start throwing up, losing weight, losing my hair. And what's wrong? I said, no, I'm cutting up. I want to cut up. I'm getting rid of some fat. I'm usually about 170. You know, I got down to about 155. And man. And then I beat it. I get cancer-free. But I started feeling sorry for myself. And God sends you little messages. I remember being in my room and I had my shirt off and I'm looking, I'm skinny and I think, God, man, what? Man, I feed your homeless. I damn, I help them. I give them all my old clothes. What do you want from me? And I remember getting mad, and I walked out of my bedroom, and what's on TV? Some six-year-old kid talking about, and if you give to St. Jude, we'll give you this blank. Ah! That's not fair! That's not fair! I'm 70 years old, the kid's only six! That's not fair! That was the message. 2 weeks later, I got asked to speak for some program. It's the band of, I don't even know, but it was a band of kids, a band, and they've all beat cancer. I sat there, I tried to talk without crying. That's the kind of messages I get. If I start feeling sorry, I got no business feeling sorry. In fact, there's a whole lot of people in this room that if it wasn't for this program, you should be dead. Do you understand? And it's like, yet we can find. I have so many problems. You don't understand the depth of my pain. Try sitting in a cell trying to bolt your arm off. You're like, wow, we have gone from crazy to being able to live in a society of people that are like really got our back. Do you understand? Everybody around me. I'm showing you just one little. I met Mario, my best friend, in San Quentin. I was doing a movie. He was a resident. He hates it when I say inmate. Yeah, I'm a resident. And so, but he was a resident. He goes, no, I have a bay view. You know? So, and he's like, we talked about the program. I do what I do. Hey, this is it. This is it. This is it. 8 years later, I run into him in the NA convention. We start talking, blah, blah, blah. I lived with him and Max for a while because I was going through a divorce. One of the wives got smart. And then I bought a house and he got sick, so I moved him in with me. And 8 years ago, he ended up saving my son's life. I know, that's, you understand, that's how this thing works, is you do something and you don't expect any reward, and then something like that happens. That's the program, that's the magic of this program, that's the magic that you'll turn away from if you leave. So by the grace of God, I'm here, I've been here 53 years, I ain't got no place to go. Do you understand? I walk into liquor stores and hey, you ain't buying no liquor here, Trail. What are you talking about? I can buy it if I want to. No, I'm on the program. Do you understand? So if you're new, please, there's no other game in town. Do you understand? This is it. For us, this is it. And I know some of you are, no, but I'm down set on therapy. Good, but your higher power got you here first. So do all the therapy you want. But don't leave Alcoholics Anonymous. Do all the church you want, but don't leave Alcoholics Anonymous. Because that higher power that's smarter than you got you here first. Do you understand? I've been in therapy. Didn't help. And be totally honest with a therapist and they'll call the cops. But you know what? God bless you. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you.
Your birthday is at this meeting for every 365 days of continuous sobriety. We give a cake with the appropriate number of candles on it. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything. What was that tent? What was the tent? What? Reefer tent. That was very funny. Or anything which affects you from the neck up. If you are a regular attender of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please see me at the door before the meeting. If you're taking a cake tonight, line up here in order of sobriety. And if you're taking a cake online, email Kimberly K at birthdays at pacificgroupla.org by noon on Wednesday. Hybrid birthdays will be shown after the in-person birthdays. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our cake, and at the end of the year, this candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. So see my assistants at the door when you sign up for your cake. If you are participating online, please arrange for this with our treasurer, Lon B., at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. And now we're going to sing briskly and speak briefly. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AAs. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back. Okay. Our first birthday is for 6 years for Zoe.
Zoe Alcoholic, I'd like to thank God, AAPG, Marilyn, Clancy, and all of you.
Our next birthday is for 7 years for Jessica D.
Hi, Jessica Alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, PG, my sponsor Kimberly, my grand sponsor Mary, and all of you.
Our next birthday is for 12 years for Jack G.
My name's Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Doug, for 12 years of sponsorship and friendship, Pacific Group, AA, and all of you. Thank you so much.
Our next birthday for 25 years for Yuko P.
My name is Yukuman Alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, AA,
Marilyn,
for giving the cake and for being in my corner always, and her love and guidance and incredible example. My sponsor, Lindsay J, for sponsoring me since day zero. And Clancy, Marion W, Claire E, and all the people I sponsor, and my crazy family, Keith, Kiko, and Kira. And I really want to thank all of you, the fellowship of the Pacific Group. Thank you for saving my life.
Thank you, Yuko. And just to announce, her husband is here tonight. 25 years for David A.
Hi, everybody. I'm David. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my sponsor, Tom, for his example, for all the fun we get to have playing golf every week, all my friends, my brothers. I want to thank all the friends that I made here, but especially I want to thank my daughter for coming out today, my wife who's watching me on Zoom and told me not to forget her, and all of you.
And our last birthday is for 40 years for Jeff N.
paper.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jeff. I want to thank my sponsor, Johnny. I want to thank my lovely wife, your ex-secretary, Duffy. I want to thank my guys I sponsor, the coffee crew, Class of 81, Alcoholics Anonymous, for saving my life, and I want to thank God. That's it.
We have a few special announcements tonight. First of all, as you know, we want to thank the crews who helped us move into this building. But then once we had the vaccine mandate, we had to have a whole other crew thing. So first of all, I want to thank Dave, my assistant secretary, who's done a fantastic job. I want to thank Ron, our treasurer. I want to thank the coffee crew. I want to thank our scribes, the birthday scribe, the vaccine crew especially. I want to thank Jim Borghese and the setup crew, Greg Day, and the lighting crew, and Thomas Sells, and everyone who's helped us through this transition to the new location and with the new restrictions. And we know how much alcoholics love restrictions. Anyway, the vaccination cards are being accepted to fulfill our landlord's request for proof of a negative COVID test or within 72 hours of coming to the meeting. So you can email your Vax card to Patty G at commitments@pacificgroupla.org. We also have a brief announcement from our GSR, Cara B. Two Zoom birthdays, for 1 year for Paul H., and his sponsor is Eddie S., and for 38 years for Desmond, and his sponsor is Tom B.